Good morning. This is Sunday, December 7th at 11 o'clock a.m. We are continuing our study of certain chapters from the books mentioned in A Message for the Ages, where it goes through the letters for the years 1960 through 1981 and tells the books that contain those letters. This one was to be 1970 letters, Awakening Mystical Consciousness. And I have that book, but I was unable to locate it. I think it's in a box up in the garage, as are some of these newer ones on the right-hand side here. I'll have to go dig them out. But in the meantime, since I couldn't find Awakening Mystical Consciousness, there are several books that are not listed there. One is God, the Substance of All Form. And I thought about using that book, finding a chapter in there, a certain chapter. And all week I looked at it and picked it up and read a little here and a little there, and just nothing seemed right about it. And so while I was prepared to take a chapter to study from God, the Substance of All Form, it just didn't seem right. And then this morning I woke up and had a particularly good meditation in which I felt the leading of the presence. And I was led to this book called Rising in Consciousness, which is not one of the books in the list. However, this book, Rising in Consciousness, is part of a trilogy, and they're all, well, when I bought them, they were hardbacks, and I don't know if they're all in print anymore. And they are Rising in Consciousness, the San Francisco Lecture Series of 1948, Consciousness in Transition, which is Metaphysical Notes, and Consciousness Transformed, which is the 1963-64 Hawaii Hotel Talks. And so this makes a trilogy. And in this book, Rising in Consciousness, I was led to the chapter 6 called Be a Beholder. He also called it in the Kailua Study Series, Bear Witness to God in Action. Joel mentions being a beholder, being a witness, bearing witness, standing a little to one side and watching. He mentions it over and over throughout the writings and throughout his lectures because it's what he practiced. And so therefore the chapter, the principle of being a beholder, is very important to us in this work, the work of Rising in Consciousness. Now, before we begin, let us all take a minute or two, become centered, become still inside, open yourself to receptivity, not to me, not to the book, not even to the words, but to the spirit that spoke these words, to the spirit that's behind these words. Be receptive to that spirit within your being, which is uttering these words to your outer awareness. So let's take a moment and be still now. I would like you to see what sometimes flows through an individual when they are standing a little to one side as a beholder. Now, this, of course, is Joel's poem, The Nightingale of the East. And he was in Egypt at the time, and it flowed through him, and he put pen to paper and wrote it down. All the time, standing off and being a beholder as it was happening. Amidst the flowering lands of a garden in Egypt sat a nightingale of great beauty. Its soaring song filled the oasis with lilting melody. Its song was a carol of love, a message of peace from out the heart of the infinite, stilling the waves of the world of sense. Knowest thou, O bard, of the peace that fares forth with thy song? Knowest thou the strife that is stilled by the melody from thy throat? The nightingale knows not of the power of its song, and less of the unrest that is quieted by its sound. So should ye be, as the song of God pours from you, the willing carriers of the divine message, yet unaware of the power of your being, and still less aware of the troubled hearts you quiet with the melody of love. Signed, Joel Goldsmith. Now, you and I, all of us, must be beholders. Jesus Christ thought that that was rather important because he's constantly saying, "Behold, I come quickly. Behold, I make all things new. Behold, it is I." He's constantly saying that you should behold the Christ. Remember, this is not a man. This was not a man talking. This was Christ speaking from the deep within to the outer awareness. Joel's constantly telling us the real purpose for the mind is as an avenue of awareness or an avenue of beholding. And so the mind cannot take these truths and repeat them over and over, whether audibly or quietly within, silently. The mind cannot take these truths and repeat them and create something. You cannot say to yourself throughout the day 300 times, "Thy grace is my sufficiency, thy grace is my sufficiency, thy grace is my sufficiency," and expect that grace to flow. You could say that 300 times and trip and fall in the yard, and then wonder, "How could that happen? I was practicing the principle." Oh, my friend, no, you weren't. You were knowing the principle with your mind. And we, on this path, are ascending up over the mind to find out how Christ practices the principle. Because when you ascend up over the mind, then Christ lives you. And you stand as an avenue of awareness, beholding the Christ living you. So let us enter into this chapter and the principles thereof. Be a beholder, be a witness. That's how he starts the chapter. And he has exclamation points. Be a beholder, be a witness. He says, "The principal point of what I talk and write about is that what appears to us as error in any form is really not error at all. that there is neither a sin nor a disease that has to be overcome. It exists only as an illusory experience, a mental belief. And the more clearly you can perceive the unreal nature of any form of error, the closer you will come to being free of it. Why does he start us out talking about the illusory nature of error? Because until you have that particular letter of truth in which you can remind yourself while you're walking around or when you're sitting down to meditation, remind yourself that error is a very ugly picture, but that's just what it is, a picture in thought. It has no substance, no law. God is not behind it. God is not maintaining and sustaining it. It's a mental belief, and so it's in the mind, isn't it? In the world mind. The mind seeing a world separate from God. He starts us there because it's necessary that you know that letter of truth before you can become still enough to be a beholder. It requires stillness. Now, somewhere around 1973, I had reached a place in my life, I think I was 19 years old, I reached a place where I was so full of pain and despair, I was quietly contemplating suicide. And I was very serious about it. At the time, I was working as a veterinarian's assistant. And in the morning, I would open the office and go inside. I would clean the cages. I would feed and water the animals. I would turn on the sterilizer and sterilize all the medical instruments for surgeries that day. I think I also did a little work looking in the microscope to see if certain animals had worms or whatnot. And I gave some medications to the animals and even some subcutaneous shots. But I was so full of despair in my personal life that I looked on the shelf to see what pills were up there that I could consume in a mass amount to get rid of myself. At the time, I hated myself more than any other person ever could. Well, I hated my guts is the way to say it in modern language. It was so bad that when I would see my reflection in the mirror, I would spit at it. But I also had an ego, and I wanted people to believe that I was spiritual because I was reading these spiritual books and memorizing things, and it was all on the mental level. And so I would wipe the mirror off before anybody could catch me. And if you asked me, I would quote spiritual principles, maybe the art of meditation or practicing the presence or something like that. Probably some Emmett Fox and some Walter C. Lanyon, Joseph Brennan. I would quote things to you. That's what I was, really, a walking letter of truth. And let me tell you, when we are told the letter kills, I was standing right there. I knew the letter backwards and forwards, and it was killing me. I did not have the consciousness of the presence of the living God. I had the knowledge that there might be such a thing. And so I secretly contemplated committing suicide and killing myself, and I read the medicines on the shelves, and I saw phenobarbital, and I saw Valium, and I considered swiping a bottle and taking all of it. That's where I stood when one night at about 2 o'clock or 3 in the morning, I said to the universe in general, God, Jesus, Buddha, Christ, cosmic consciousness, anyone, anywhere, please, I'll do anything if you just show me how to live. I looked at everything I knew intellectually, and I saw that it was useless. I had come to a place where if I did not find the spirit of truth, the letter was going to kill me. It was quietly driving me insane, because I could read all these things, I could hear them on tapes, but I could not feel them. And the spirit of truth brings feeling. Instead of knowing about the presence, you feel it. And that's the difference. And so, after I surrendered on my front porch steps, in the days and weeks that followed, I walked around saying, Thy will be done. It's your ball game. It's your show. And I would pause. And I did that many, many, many times throughout the day and night. I was practicing the principle of standing to the side, being a beholder. And I'm telling you, I witnessed God, an invisible hand reaching right up out through me and moving things around in my life. God was acting, doing, being. And it arranged things out there so beautifully that within 30 days I felt a peace inside of my being that I never knew was possible. I discovered inside my own being, as a beholder, that there really is a God, and it's not a word in a book. It's an experience, and it happens when you come up over the letter and rest back in the spirit and behold it. I discovered through my own experience that it's not by power physically, not by might mentally, not the intellectual knowing, but by my spirit. Not by might nor by power, but by my spirit. And I discovered that as my own experience. It became an experience that I lived and do live, even today, 42 years later. I discovered it as an experience, not as words in a book. That's what I hope for all of you. And so he's telling us here that we need to be a beholder. We need to be a witness. But what are we to behold and what are we to witness? Well, before he gets into that, he's going to say a couple things that I felt were interesting. He says in 1928, he says, I lost all desire for the things of the earth. And that's what happened to me 42 years ago. The only desire I had was to watch, to wait, to behold, to do whatever the next indicated thing was. And he says here, I had a very hard time hating Mr. Hitler. It was not easy for me to hold harsh feelings toward him. Now, remember, this was only 18 years after the Holocaust. Only 18 years after the mass graves and the ovens and the relocation to Auschwitz and Dachau. And yet he could not have hard feelings toward Hitler. Why? Because he was able to behold something in men and women that is beautiful, even when outwardly they may not be manifesting it at the time. You see, when you become a beholder, and you behold God working in and as and through you, you are then able to see the same thing working through others. And then, of course, you can't hold harsh feelings toward the personality because you see through it. Do you know when you see a personality, you're looking at the letter? You have to be looking at the letter, not at the spirit. What is the letter? The letter is that which is known in the mind. Where do you see the personality? You see it in your mind. That's the concept of spirit. It's the letter. You're seeing the letter of people and not the spirit. Joel is telling you that when you rise up to that point of being a beholder, you will behold the spirit in your brother and sister. So he's going to now begin to gently show you how you behold consciousness, because God and consciousness are one. Remember, he says elsewhere that consciousness is the most important word in the infinite way. Consciousness and God are one. And so he says, my supply comes to me directly from my own consciousness. And he discovered this the hard way, the same way I discovered being a beholder. Because if you read his autobiography and in other places, you will find out that he reached a place where he was penniless. He had only 10 cents in his pocket. And he's walking home, and he had sent bills out to the people that he had healed, and nobody was paying the bills. They said thank you very much and went on their way. He wasn't receiving any donations. Nobody was paying the bills. The bills that he wrote up and sent out to the patients, nobody was paying them. And here he was walking down the street with it, only a dime in his pocket, not even enough for a meal. And he thought about it and looked at it and looked at it, and that's when he came to the realization, I am the way. I am your supply. And that's when he stopped sending out bills, remember? He didn't bill anybody anymore after that. He stopped sending out bills, and he said, fine, I'm going to stand on this principle, and I'm either going to starve or I'm going to demonstrate by being a beholder that I really does take over. Consciousness really does form itself. That's what we're talking about. Lives where we don't live by the letter. We don't live by mind forming itself. We live by consciousness forming itself. And it began to open up, and the flow started to work. Consciousness began forming itself. And of course, you know the rest of the story. He was quite wealthy. Lived in Hawaii, traveled around the world, stayed at the best hotels, ate the best food. Never was without, ever again. And so when we discover these principles the hard way, it is perhaps the best way. Gosh, I'm just getting started on this chapter, and we're already almost at a half an hour. Well, we'll see what happens. So he says, my supply comes to me directly from my own consciousness. I receive it directly through my own consciousness. See, that's an awareness that he has. You may be the avenue through which it comes to me. You may be that point of consciousness receiving good through me. But the infinite consciousness which I am will provide my supply for me. So you see, it appears as people giving you a donation, in my case, giving me a donation, or it appears as people paying me for a service, or it appears as people sending a thank you gift after receiving prayer. But it's coming from consciousness appearing as. And he says, when you realize that all of your good flows from your own consciousness, you can no longer be envious or jealous. Of course not. Because now you know what they have, they're demonstrating. He says, the place whereon I stand is holy ground. If you can realize God as your own individual being, you will very quickly find a change of consciousness that will attract to you all of the good, not only necessary, but an abundance of it. Yes, if you can recognize and realize that God is your own individual being, then the flow will begin and you will experience an abundance of it. But remember, the only way to recognize, realize, and demonstrate that you have something is by giving it away or by sharing it. If I have $100 in my pocket and I die with $100 in my pocket, you read about these people that have $50,000, $100,000 under their mattress and they die. Did they ever have that money? No, they didn't. They just had paper under the mattress. You prove that you have something by using it, by sharing it, by giving. And so the only way you can prove that God is your individual being is to stand to the side and be a beholder of God giving, pouring, loving, doing. I know when I say that, people think that I'm reaching out for something from them, and I'm not. I'm only saying the principle. You can't. The only way you can prove God is your being is to let God act. The only way you can prove you have something is to share it. So, Joel says that in several places. And here he says, there's no limit to the amount of health and wealth we are permitted to have under spiritual law. But there really must be that spiritual illumination. Now, what does that mean? That means it's not enough to know the letter. If you know the letter, well, let's see, God is my individual being, and so I'm going to share part of this $50, or I'm going to share my time and help that person, or I'm going to share my clothes in the closet that I don't use anymore, or I'm whatever you decide you're going to share, you are going to share. That's not spiritual illumination. That's not even practicing this principle. No. That's you sharing as a human being. And when you share out of your money, out of your possessions, out of your time, then what? After you share, you have less. You shared $20, now you only have $30. Wow, I only have 30 now. I don't have enough to pay my bills. I thought I was practicing the principle. What went wrong? Well, you were just lacking one little tiny thing, and that's spiritual illumination. You thought it was you. You still didn't have the principle or the consciousness. You see, you have to have this change of consciousness, this change of center, changing your center from being you to standing a little to the side and being beholder of God sharing. Now, when you see and you feel God sharing through you or as you, that's a whole different thing. Then the more you give, the more you have. And then the principle, to him that hath it shall be given, is something you witness. You bear witness to it. It's living itself through you. Okay? You see the difference? One is just the letter, and one is the consciousness. One is the letter living itself, which leadeth to death, or lack and limitation, and one is the consciousness living itself. You are beholding consciousness sharing, giving, pouring. And that leadeth to life eternal and to abundance. So he says, in this message, we have two important quotations from the Bible. And here, I must remind you again, don't think that by memorizing and reciting them, they will do anything for you. They will not. And if they do, it will be too bad for you, for it will not be permanent. Yes, if you are standing and relying on reciting these quotations from memory, then you're living by the letter, and it doesn't taste very good, and it runs out. You're living by black ink, or by mind. And mind, of course, is world mind. But, or however, if you come into the conscious awareness, if you behold these principles from consciousness forming itself, then you have life eternal. Then you know God aright. Then you're living by consciousness formed. So he says the first principle is take no thought for your life. You may refer to that entire passage in Luke 12:22-32. Throughout all of my writings, I stress as a vital part of your unfoldment, take no thought. That does not mean to become mentally lazy. Now, this is very important that you understand this point. When Christ says to you, when the inner Christ to you says, take no thought, it does not mean to just sit back and say, well, I don't have to worry about my life. God's taking care of it. Because you're very well apt to find out that God isn't. Because you still have God and you and your life. You're living in the consciousness of duality. Thinking that by not thinking of your life, you're practicing this principle. And you're not. That's not it. No, take no thought for your life does not mean that you just sit around and play cards and eat bonbons and watch TV and take a stroll in the park and think that God's going to take over. Something must be taking place within. He says here, you have to have a change of consciousness. What does that mean? It means you have to have a change of awareness from the awareness of your human life, acting from the mind, taking thought for it, to a place of being a beholder of consciousness living itself. That change must take place within. And it doesn't take place if you're just sitting around being lazy, waiting for God to do it. That's not the correct interpretation of this principle. No, you must live in the constant realization that God is your very own consciousness. The constant realization. That means that inside yourself, something must be going on constantly. And, of course, in the beginning, that constant thing that's going on is what was going on in me when I first started. And the words that I used were, it's your ball game, it's your show, thy will be done, show me what to do, express yourself. Mostly it was thy will be done. But it doesn't matter what words you use. The words are only the letter used to lift you to a state of awareness. Because while I was saying, thy will be done, it's your ball game, it's your show, all day and at night. That was going on within me constantly, and I was not taking thought for my life. I was taking thought remembering God throughout the day, and remembering that my job is to stand a little to the side and be a beholder. And I was constantly doing that all day, so I was very busy within. I just wasn't busy with a personal life. I was busy with the impersonal life, watching the impersonal. He's going to get into that here. He says we are living in the constant realization that God is our very own consciousness, always at the standpoint of waiting to hear it. And you develop that state. Okay, so the first very important quotation is, take no thought for your life. But in the beginning, you take a lot of thought for God's life and God manifesting and God's will being done. You take a lot of thought to remind yourself to be a beholder. And Joel tells us in the beginning, this is work. It's hard work to remember not to forget and forget not to remember. It takes work, but it gradually becomes a state of awareness. And then he says it's easier than water rolling off your back in the shower. It takes no effort. Oh, it may take a one thy will be done, but then for hours and hours you are watching as a beholder. You don't have to take the letter and repeat it to yourself. Now you have the consciousness, the awareness. So he says the second quotation is, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit. He says there's no opportunity here for being mentally lazy either. He says it's not the physical or mental effort that you make, it is the spiritual awareness. Making this transition from the human method of living, that is, living by the mind, and of supplying oneself with health and wealth, to the spiritual, the rebirth requires that God at all times be the central theme in your consciousness. You see that? Do you see that? It takes work in the beginning. We're not sitting around saying God will do it, and now I've practiced the principle. We're making a concerted effort to make the transition from a human sense of life in which mind is acting through us and as us, to that place where we are constantly recognizing and realizing God as consciousness living itself. We're standing to the side, consciously aware. Our mind now is not thinking. No, our mind now is an avenue of awareness. We're aware of consciousness forming itself. And so he says, you have got to think, but don't think about things you need. Think about God. You see, that's the step leading to the awareness. And you have to take that step. You have to, as we have said before, make the effort, extreme effort, to learn to be effortless. So you make the effort to be effortless. And it works. You reach the point, remember? You reach an actual moment, says Joel, in which it takes over. And that it is God, or that it is your consciousness takes over. And you see, and I can't tell you how wonderful, how beautiful, how free it is to live by consciousness and to live as a beholder, to watch consciousness living itself. You don't want anything. There's no desire anymore. Well, there is a desire. It's a desire to just commune with that consciousness forever. And so you do. You watch, you wait, you witness, you behold. I, within, make all things new and wonderful and abundant. He says, perhaps as we came into metaphysics, we became faithful mental workers, and we gave ourselves and our families good mental treatments. All of that was a stepping stone up to this. Here we are again, trying to make the transition from the letter to the spirit. Now, we are not going to use our physical or mental work as a springboard for our good. We're not going to do that now. We will use our spiritual unfoldment, our spiritual consciousness, and we will do it in this way. Be a beholder. Now, if you've never been a beholder, it's probably difficult to understand this. And you might find that you struggle, as I did, with the letter and reach that point of desperation where you cry out and you just completely surrender. That period, that point of surrender is exactly what being a beholder is. You let go and let God consciously. So he says, we do it in this way. Be a beholder. Watch as if you were looking over your own shoulder as to what God was going to bring to pass in your experience. The God that is right where you are. The God that sits at the center of your consciousness knows all. We are sort of watching over the shoulder to watch God appear in form. You see, God is not something separate from the form in which God appears. God is the substance and essence of that form. And he gives a little example. He says, God has not brought this group together today. God has appeared here as this group. There is not God and this class. There is God appearing as this class. Okay, now this is difficult to understand. I'm not even sure understanding is necessary. We need experience. We need to experience this being a beholder of consciousness forming itself. And then, of course, the understanding follows. But nevertheless, let's describe it. When you experience mind, world mind, forming itself, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's evil. It's always the pairs of opposites, and usually you're struggling to, with that mind, to take steps necessary out here and in here to change the bad into good. Whether it means, well, I'm lacking, so I'll go out and get a job, or I'm alone, so I'll go get a mate, or I'm not healthy, so I'll start physically exercising. The mind is coming up with solutions, all right? Now, this is world mind forming itself, and it's always forming in pairs of opposites. And we swing like a pendulum from one opposite to the other, over and over and over for our entire lifespan. Now, opposed to that, or as against that, we have, or different than that, we have the life that is lived when consciousness lives itself and you are the beholder. When that happens, you do not see spirit. You feel spirit. Spiritually, you discern spirit. You discern consciousness. You discern God within you. The movement, I call it, of spirit. Movement of this presence, the movement of infinite consciousness within you. You feel it, but you don't see it. What your eyes see are your interpretation of it. It always appears as good, as harmony. It always appears as your need fulfilled. But it appears on your level. If you are an architect, Joel points out in other books, this consciousness will appear as a new design. It'll just come to you, and quickly your pencils will fly over the paper. If you are a musician, this consciousness will appear as a new melody, a new song, new lyrics. If you are a person working with spiritual principles, this consciousness will appear as a new book, or a new tape, or as a new awareness of a principle in the Bible that you never understood before. You just suddenly glimpse it, and you know how to live it. So, you see, that's how the mind interprets it. It's still an appearance. Yes, you're right. The appearance of $1 million will not last forever. $1 million will finally disappear or be used up. And your body, consciousness appearing as your body, will one day you'll step out of it and it'll dissolve. And you'll step into the next experience. And so, yes, we know that these are still appearances, but they're consciousness appearing, not world mind. And the reality of them is the consciousness behind them. And so always we are focused on the consciousness behind them. We are focused on consciousness appearing as. It appears as my transportation. But it is still invisible consciousness. That's the way my mind is seeing it. I know my car someday will wear out and I'll get another one. But I also know that invisible consciousness is appearing as this new automobile that I drive. Okay, do you see that? It is when I focused on God and only God, and I stopped looking for any kind of a girlfriend or a spouse or a mate or a friend. I stopped looking for any of that. I was walking around with one thing going on inside, and that was the constant thought of thy will be done. It's your ball game. It's your show. Show me what you want to do. What's next, Father? Father, thy will be done. As I stood in that consciousness, then that consciousness appeared, my very own consciousness appeared as my wife today. And I met this lady. And here's the strange thing, and many of you know this already, we lived in the same town. For 10 years we lived in the same town, a town with a population of 7,000 or 8,000. It wasn't very many at the time. And we went to the same meetings at a church, except that when she got real busy at that church, I was busy with my profession. And then there came a lapse in that, and I got busy again at that church, and she got busy with her profession. And so we never saw each other. We belonged to the same church. Isn't that weird? Yet, when we were ready, when consciousness was ready, we met. And consciousness got ready when I said, you know, I give up. I'm not going to look anymore. People don't believe me when I tell them that, but it's very true. It's the honest to God truth. I stopped looking. That's it. I'm not looking anymore. I'm just here to do thy will. Now thy will be done. And then, boom, she showed up. And it was love at first sight. And we married, and it's coming up here on 25 years. And it's been 25 good years. Consciousness is appearing as, my very own consciousness within is appearing out here as my beloved wife. Now, this is the same experience that Adam had when he, when a rib was taken from within him and appeared as Eve out here. That's the same principle demonstrated or written about by Moses. So, the point that I'm making is, yes, of course, we know that the good appearing out here is not permanent, but we still enjoy it and love it, too, because we know that behind it is this fantastic, wonderful thing called God or consciousness. So he says, in the same way, God does not send me my supply. God appears to me as my supply. God is not only my supplier, God is my supply. If at this moment I see God as food on the table, that is merely my interpretation of God appearing. Let us call it the added thing. And he says, do you follow that? And that's what I say, do you follow it? You see? There's no separation, no division between God and my good. God appears as. And this is very important, because now, as you watch your life unfolding, as you become a beholder, you're going to see God coming in infinite form and variety, no matter what form it appears in. It will be God appearing to you directly. You may see it in the form of Jesus Christ, or as a mother or a father. It will be God appearing to you in a form that you can understand. Never separate God from any of the forms in which God appears. God, being infinite, appears in infinite forms and variety. Now, isn't that strange? I was going to read a chapter from God, the substance of all form, and I could not find one in there that felt right. And here we are reading this chapter, Be a Beholder, and it's all about God, the substance of all form, or consciousness, the substance of all form. Very interesting. So, he says, there's no such thing as God and your body. Your body cannot decay or decompose unless you accept the universal belief that you have a material body which functions in time or space. They are our translation or interpretation of the divine spirit appearing. So, the mind, if you're living by the mind or you're living by world thought, the thoughts in the mind, about the world, then you are living by the letter. You have a body made up of the letter. You have a belief, a universal belief of a material body in time and space. A parenthesis. And that life is a letter. You're looking at the letter, and no wonder it's decaying. It's got nothing behind it. But now, make the transition. Become a beholder. Gain the conscious awareness of consciousness forming itself and see what that forms as a body. Then you will be seeing spirit formed, and it will be a holy good. He says, as you become conscious of God appearing to you in infinite forms and varieties, it will always appear in the form necessary to your understanding at that particular moment. If your need is what we call a house, it will appear to you in that form, but it will be God appearing, and it will be you translating it into the form at the moment. Never must we in this work do mental work for anything. Never must we dishonor God by turning to God for some kind of improvement. We turn to God for the consciousness of the presence. Yes, if you go to God for an improvement, you are asking God to improve the letter, which is mind-formed, and it kills. Dear God, will you please improve this thing which kills? What kind of prayer is that? It's not going to be answered. If he didn't love us, maybe would answer that, but he loves us too much. So the only prayer he answers is, God, grant me the consciousness of your presence. Grant me the awareness of consciousness forming itself. Let me be a beholder. Father, thy will be done. Express yourself. Now, that prayer's answered. And it's answered by this inner movement, because you've created an opening, a vacuum through which consciousness can now flow. So, to live as a beholder means, well, what's the name of this? Rising in Consciousness is the name of this book. To live as a beholder, you've got to rise up into consciousness, out of the letter into the spirit. God has not appeared before this because you have been violating this teaching. You have been trying to get things. You either fulfill the law or you do not demonstrate. And what is the law? What is the spiritual law? Consciousness. In the beginning, consciousness formed itself. And in the beginning is right now. If you become a beholder, then you witness creation. Consciousness forming itself. So, he says, seek ye first the kingdom of God. Take no thought for these other things. Why? Your heavenly Father, your divine consciousness, never farther away than your own breathing. It's knowing your needs and supplying them. How? By my spirit. Now, we understand. God does not supply your needs fulfilled by the letter. And so thoughts of this are pretty much meaningless unless they bring you to a place of silence, an absence of the letter self. If you reach that state of silence, then the consciousness self will form itself and appear as your supply fulfilled. He says, let no one misunderstand me and say that I said you do not have to do anything. I am a hard worker. I work 21 hours a day, day and night, but I am not working for anything. I am doing the work that is given to me to do this minute. I cannot be lazy. Yes, he is beholding God working 21 hours a day. He only slept for 3. That's again something that he discovered, which is that he didn't need all that sleep when consciousness was living itself. He worked 21 hours a day when he wasn't talking or writing or praying. He was in silence, meditating. Spirit doesn't need what the letter needs, and the letter needs, what, 9-10 hours sleep a day in order to recover and to keep from going crazy. But when spirit is living, when consciousness is living, it doesn't need that. It can never go crazy. So he says, the spirit forces you. It may give you rest, but never can you be lazy. When we say not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, and take no thought, we do not mean move out to the country and let God do it. We mean this. Instead of being concerned for things, be concerned with God and do what is given you to do. So even though we have said take no thought, when a call comes for you to do something, be alert and do it. Yes, it's a constant. Remember, constantly within we're busy. Until we rise in consciousness to that place where we are a beholder. Then the rest comes. But it's a rest in the middle of activity. It's a rest in the middle of action. Consciousness says, go here, go there, go give that talk, pick up the phone, answer this mail. You're resting within now. You have the awareness of consciousness doing these things. And so you're busy, but you're resting. You've learned how to stand up and sit down at the same time. Don told me I would have to learn how to do that. I wasn't sure what he was talking about, but I am now. He says, we do these things not because our human activity is important, but because your human activity is merely your carrying out on your level of consciousness the divine command. Yes, that's the same thing. He says, this will not take you away from normal living. It may interfere with the normal routine for a while, and it is worthwhile. It is a new kingdom. Yes, 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 yes. If you live by the letter, by the mind, and the letter forms itself as your experience, then you will have the law, the letter. You will have the pairs of opposites, and you will live in under the law. And you won't be able to get away from karma. The letter has karma. And so that's the universe you will live in, and it's not a very happy one. It's always in the pairs of opposites, one opposite to the other, one opposite to the other, one opposite to the other, never getting free. But if you will rise in consciousness, if you will live life as a beholder, gain the conscious awareness of resting and witnessing God in action, then you live in a new kingdom. We read about that last week, the New Jerusalem. Love thy neighbor as thyself, he says. How? It is only as we meet all on a spiritual level that we can love them, and I mean love. As we can look through physicality, look through Dun and Bradstreet. All right, so he says, now, again, be a beholder. Our attitude is always that of being at a place, as in a movie, watching the picture unfold. You know that the entire movie is really complete on the roll of film. And we, as a beholder, are in much that same position because it is God unfolding as my existence. Even if I have to go down to death's door, or come to a place where for a few days I haven't enough money to pay for food. See, that's what happened to him. None of that is important because I know that God is unfolding my life, and therefore it is going to be a happy ending. And I had to go down to where I was on death's door, secretly thinking of how to get a way out. All right? Looks like we're running over. We knew we would in the beginning. And that's just the way it is. But we're almost done. Okay. In my whole life, there is only one state of thought that has registered with me. I and the Father are one. Anything along that line will find in me a wonderful state of receptivity. My only teacher is the state of consciousness. I and the Father are one. Son, all that I have is thine. The place whereon I stand is holy ground. Take no thought for your life, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit. That is my teacher, not a man, a woman, or a book. My teacher is my own state of consciousness, of oneness. Now, when I met Herb for the very first time in Avila Beach, Northern California, I had a personal, private session with him after the classes were over. And I knocked on his door, and he opened his door, and he said, please have a seat. And I sat down, and I said, Herb, I have to tell you, you are not my teacher. I have a teacher, and the teacher is within. That's the first thing I ever said to him. And he was very gracious about it. And he recognized that that is the only teacher. And so that's what Joel's saying here. He has always felt attracted to this state of consciousness as it came through others in the Bible and as it came through Christ Jesus, as it came through Isaiah and Moses. He always felt attracted to the consciousness that was realizing that consciousness lives itself. You don't live it. Consciousness lives itself as you behold. And so that was his state of consciousness when he awakened here, and that's what he was always attracted to, and that state of consciousness is his teacher. Try to remember, he says, that your teacher is your state of consciousness expressing itself. That is your teacher. Oh, yes, you can read a lot of different books, but stick to that particular teaching which brings out a response. You can feel it. Yes, that's right. You can feel it. Ye are God's witnesses. Be a witness. Be a beholder of God's unfoldment as your experience. That's standing and watching consciousness form itself. Consciousness appear as form. Spirit formed, or God, the substance of all form, instead of watching the letter form itself, or the mind form itself. So it says, as you behold, you will find that you truly have to take no thought. As a matter of fact, there is no way you can take thought. The right way to do this, learn to be a beholder, as if you were looking over your shoulder. Myself, he says, I have built up this consciousness of always knowing that God is unfolding, appearing to me in some form. You can do the same thing. You can build yourself up as a beholder, which is rising in consciousness. Awaken in the morning, knowing that God is appearing as. God is unfolding your experience, and never deviate. If you have bad news or an accident, don't be tempted, don't be double-minded and say, oh, this is error. Nothing but God is appearing. If it takes a pain to make me reinterpret it, it will have to be that way. We will not acknowledge that error can do this to me or ask why error is doing this to me today. There is no error except such as you accept. God is the only presence and the only power, and everything that is happening to you today, this minute, is happening as the result of God appearing in, for, and through you, if you will acknowledge him in all ways. And it does not say in all good ways. Acknowledge him in all thy ways. Acknowledge God as the only actor in your experience, the only presence, the only power, the only law, the only substance, the only cause, the only effect. God. God. All right, so even if the mind starts showing you these opposites again, here's good and here's evil, I'm seeing error, this is only error. No, he says, don't go into argument like that. Then you're back in the letter. No, he says, stay up here in consciousness and recognize God is the only presence. So, what is this? This must be the mind. Now, Father, reveal thyself. You know, whatever words help you get back in the consciousness behind all form. Instead of looking at the concepts in the mind, come up over that and look at consciousness. No matter what pictures the mind is showing you, you must reinterpret it. You must get out of that and up into that place of rest where you are a beholder. He says, the divine infinite consciousness, which is your consciousness, is the infinite eternal life, which is your life. Acknowledge no life apart from God life, and you will never have the experience of dying. It will never happen to you. That's very important. Acknowledge no life apart from your God life. In other words, acknowledge no personal sense life, but acknowledge only consciousness forming itself as you, and you will never have the experience of dying. It will never happen to you. Do you see that? You see that scripture? To know God aright is life eternal? Yes, yes, it's true. To know God aright, to know consciousness forming itself, means you know your own eternal life, that which will never die. And so if you stand in that new kingdom, that new awareness, that new consciousness, you will never die, you see? So he says, God is the reality of my being. Don't separate God from its forms. God is not sending something to you. God is appearing to you in infinite form. God is appearing to you as. There's no such thing as Joel Goldsmith and his body. I and my Father are one. I and my body are one. I am the consciousness which appears as this body. So my body will never die. If consciousness always appears as body, no matter what happens to a mental image, consciousness will always eternally appear as body. Therefore, your body is eternal. I know that my state of consciousness is always held to God, to the Spirit of Truth, and is forming me every single day. And because there is no time, it will go on doing that forever. I love how he does that. In the one place, he says there's no material self, and in the next place, he says there's no time. He says, nothing is appearing to you except God in infinite form and variety. You may at this moment be entertaining a material concept of your body, and you must change that. Your body is spiritual. It was formed of the substance of God, or consciousness. If you want to change your body, change your concept, or your consciousness of body, and then your body will respond. You see that? So, this chapter, chapter 6, be a beholder, means exactly that. You must come out of the letter, or the mind, which is where the letter exists, and forms itself as these pairs of opposites, over and over and over again. You must come out of the mind, the letter, into consciousness appearing, consciousness formed, into the actual awareness of being a beholder. When you do that, then that which Christ whispered, lo, those many thousands of years ago, becomes a living experience. Behold, I shall make all things new. And there is John, and I beheld the new Jerusalem coming down out of heaven. See, he beheld a new experience, a new self, consciousness forming itself. Coming down out of heaven means coming down out of consciousness. John beheld it, and then he told you how to go and do likewise. And then Joel repeated it, and I am repeating it. Come out of the letter, the world mind. Rise in consciousness, into consciousness. Let consciousness form itself and be a beholder. I want to describe one more thing. And yes, I know we've run over, but this came to me today to share with you. When I was a child, this is an illustration of what happens when you watch consciousness, when you're a beholder of consciousness appearing. When I was a child, I was probably 6 or 7, and I was determined that I was going to see Santa Claus bringing the gifts and putting them under the tree. From my bedroom, I could see, I had a direct line of sight to half of the Christmas tree in the living room. I could see that half. And that is from my bed. If I got out of bed, I could see the whole tree. But staying in bed there, I watched and I could see half a tree. My mother was still up, and I was convinced that I would be able to stay awake and see Santa Claus. I knew he was coming. I wanted to see. I wanted to bear witness. And so I struggled to keep my eyes open. Well, eventually I must have dozed off. And as soon as I realized I was sleeping, I forced myself to wake up, and I opened my eyes, and it had only been a minute or two, just a couple of minutes, I'm certain of it. But when I opened my eyes, I looked out at the Christmas tree. My mother was in bed now, and there were presents everywhere. It was fabulous, except that I missed Santa, and I really wanted to catch him. Well, I can tell you from my own experience that this is just like that. You know that something's coming. You know that consciousness is going to appear. You don't know how. You don't know how. And if you watch, and you try to catch consciousness forming itself, you won't. It won't happen. It won't happen that way. Which is why Joel told us, you must do the work that's put in front of you to do. And let consciousness form itself. Don't help it. And don't try to catch it. And so as I practice that same principle with this, and I recognize consciousness is going to form itself. I don't know how. I don't know as what. I do know it'll be presence. I know it'll be wonderful. And so, rather than trying to catch it in the act, I will do that which is given me to do. Remind myself several times a day, consciousness is forming itself, and do the work that's given me to do. Clear off my desk. Answer phone calls. And then when I least expect it, lo and behold, the presence appears. And first the presence appears as a feeling inside of the presence. And then it appears out here as presence. Every good and perfect gift. And it's a wonderful way to live. You live this way and you experience Christmas every day. Every day of your life is Christmas. It's wonderful. And so, with that, I will say, Merry Christmas.